Oh. My son gave me this for my birthday, and I'm not quite comfortable in the digital age. I really appreciate an opportunity to spend a little time with you because it gives me a chance to say thank you. And it gives me a chance to share with you some of the challenges that I perceive as critically important to the world in which we live. I never thought I'd be making a speech like this. I've come to realize that unless we can find a way to make democracy and free enterprise help to end poverty, all of our lives are going to be in jeopardy. That whether we call it tribalism or whether we call it religious dysfunctionality or foreign policy conflicts, most of the problems of the world grow out of some people being perceived that they are not getting a fair share of what's going on in the world. And that's increasingly difficult because everybody has these little contraptions. Everybody has television sets. Everybody has computers. Everybody knows what's going on almost everywhere. And it's almost intolerable to most people that a few people enjoy most of the blessings of the world and the overwhelming majority of God's children are underprivileged and denied. I think the reason that the Soviet Union failed was that communism proved inadequate to create a middle class. It made a few people very, very rich, but there was no broad-based middle class committed to communism because communism didn't produce a middle class. The only reason you and I are here today is that our society, free enterprise and democracy in the United States of America, has been able to produce a middle class. Franklin Roosevelt saw to that. He saw to it that education was available to all of our citizens. We had a creed that everybody could have an education free. We made possible land-grant colleges because we knew how important education was. But the significant thing about creating a middle class is a housing industry. Franklin Roosevelt made it possible for people to build houses, to own their own homes. And you don't know what that means, but that's the key to the success of capitalism in America. I never realized this till I read a book by a Latin American economist called Hernando de Soto. And the title of it is The Mystery of Capital. And he's saying one of the reasons why capitalism works so well in the United States is that once you get title to a piece of land, you can go to the bank and you can borrow against it. And when you borrow against it, you can start a business, or you can buy another piece of land, or you can do almost anything you want. But the ownership of a single piece of property, I came here to work with Martin Luther King, and my wife was teaching in Atlanta Public Schools, and we were lucky enough to be able to buy a house for $32,000. It just happened to be a brick house in the city limits of Atlanta, 15 minutes from downtown and still 15 minutes from the airport. And we didn't realize, we didn't think we could afford it. We didn't know how we were gonna pay those notes. But that little house has educated all of our children. Because every time I got in trouble, I refinanced it. And by refinancing that house over and over again, I got four children educated. And I've got a lawyer and an engineer and a school teacher and a businessman. And none of them had any debts because of a single house. In fact, I was sitting down figuring up How much has that house meant to my family over the last 45 years? And I figure it's worth at least $1 million. By the time we've turned it over and over. Now, I didn't know what I was doing. Think of what it would have been like if I had known what I was doing. That was just a knee-jerk response, a knee-jerk reaction. And yet, in our society, you could get away with that. But when people start talking about financial literacy, they usually start thinking about children. But let me tell you about me. One of the negative consequences of my refinancing over and over and over again to get all my children through school is that when I finally got to the place where they were all through and I looked at my books, and it just so happened that the banks began to be a little sensitive about the way they were dealing with black consumers. And some young lady asked me, could she be my private banker? And I didn't know what that was, but we said sure, because she was a member of our church. And to have somebody that knew something about money look at our finances, she was able to take all of those notes that we were paying all over the place, roll them into one, give us one reasonable home loan. By now, my house is worth $300,000, according to the bank, and put it under one mortgage, and it saved us $973 a month. So financial literacy is absolutely essential to survival. Now, I had been to college, to seminary. I got honorary degrees from at least 50 schools. I've been a mayor, a congressman, an ambassador, and a businessman, and still didn't know anything about money. And the reason was, it's all Martin Luther King's fault. Because Martin Luther King said to us over and over again, every movement to help humanity in our lifetime, and that we've read about in history, has been destroyed by some kind of financial impropriety. Either they didn't pay the taxes, or they didn't count for this, that, and the other. And so he almost made it mandatory that we remain poor, that we not try to get rich. So even looking into our finances and hiring consultants, there was something wrong with that. He was very proud of the fact that he didn't leave his family any money. They have a house that over there on Sunset Avenue still, which he paid $40,000 for. And that was all he left when he died. But he felt as though it was necessary for us to sacrifice in order that others might prosper. And so, well, when they first started the Montgomery Improvement Association, he was arrested, not for the bus boycott that got famous. He was arrested because they accused him of not paying taxes on all of the offerings that had been taken up in all of the churches that had been having mass meetings. And they felt as though, since he was the president of the organization, he was responsible. Well, to show you how ridiculous it was, in 1957, an all-white jury in Montgomery, Alabama, found him innocent. But nevertheless, to have all your property confiscated, to have all your life put in jeopardy, and to be dragged down to jail for something that amorphous made us all leery of money. Now, that's a very dangerous situation, but it has sort of been my blessing and my curse throughout my life. I've never had any money, but I've never wanted anything. I've had everything I've needed, a lot of things that I didn't need. But I don't understand money. And that's why I got involved with John Bryant in a program called Operation Hope. Because in order for us to succeed in a free enterprise system, our young people have to understand money. And they have to understand that it's important to save, to invest, and not only to work for money, but to help money work for you. And to have a program going on in our schools in Georgia that teaches that in the middle grades is one of the things that can provide you and me with the security that we'll need in our old age. One of the reasons why they assume Social Security is not going to work, one of the reasons why all of our pension funds are being jeopardized, is that we don't have a continually growing economy. Well, if we're going to have a continually growing economy, the kids who are now in fifth, sixth, and seventh grade, whatever their color, whatever their economic background, are going to have to grow an economy that sustains us in our old age. Now, private school kids won't get it because they're going to have inherited wealth and they're going to spend the money and throw away the money their parents left them. If you look around at who generates wealth anywhere in the world, it's the poor. It's new ideas coming from the bottom up. And that's why I think our public schools are so desperately important. They're important for the survival of democracy. Because if we have public schools that turn out students who understand money, they will save, they will invest, they will grow the economy. They will be not only the CPAs, but they'll be the entrepreneurs and the lawyers and the doctors and the teachers that will generate wealth and help us to compete in a global economy that is increasingly competitive. If you want to get frightened, read Tom Friedman's The World is Flat. And if you want to be scared so you can't sleep, read China Inc. Just to make China Inc. very short, I was in China back when I was mayor, trying to get some of that Hong Kong